We are into our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. This is the morning shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. Mike Botiff here with you live here in the Kia studios. The Falcons getting ready to face the Kansas City Chiefs at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Sunday Night Football this week. And they'll be looking for another solid performance out of their defense.
Yeah, Tiff, and I'm going to, we are going to highlight somebody that is really going unnoticed. And he was kind of the ire of the fans during the offseason that he wasn't good enough. And how could we go into the season with Mike Hughes as our opposite starting cornerback of A.J. Terrell? And I saw some, you guys know I'm not the biggest pro football focused guy, but I think there's some positions, Mike, that are easier to grade than others, right? I think defensive back is one of them. Now, you don't know every time the coverage, but there are if a guy's running with another guy down the field and he gets beat, I think you can tell right? I think you can kind of tell. But he's got the 14th overall grade after two games in the entire league for defensive backs. And he's the fourth best cornerback against the run right now with a grade of an 84. In 46 coverage snaps, he's allowed 3 receiving yards, and he has 6 run stops where he's came up and made a play, which leads the league. He's been pretty good.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. I'm not massive on Pro Football Focus because there are different guys grading all these films and doing all these different things. But and I mentioned this to Goforth in the pregame on Monday that coming out of week one, I think Mike Hughes' grade for Pro Football Focus was a 90 in the run game. Like, just absolute terror when it came to the Steelers. So, I think it's been big. I don't understand, and I kind of disagree with you about the coverage grade being one of the easiest. Sometimes you have help over the top. Sometimes it's bracket. Sometimes you don't understand what everybody else is doing. You all have to work kind of in conjunction with one another. But when I look at Mike Hughes, and I guess honestly, the receiving stat's a good example of that. You're telling me he graded what he graded, but he only gave up 4 receiving yards. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But nonetheless, man, he has been everything you could have possibly asked for him to be in that role opposite A.J. Terrell and that battle with Clark Phillips and everything else. And kudos to Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, by the way, that we're going in the draft. Edge rusher, could be a corner, you don't know. Free agency, could be a corner. Workouts, Akella Witherspoon, could be signing him. They have stuck by this guy and have believed in him, and he is showing that that he was worth it.
Collectively, part of a unit that Coach Raheem Morris is proud of. He joins our Dukes and Bell to talk about the defense.
You know, it's kind of like we talked about in the beginning when we got here and we looked at the team, and you had so many players that people wasn't giving enough credit to, in our opinion. And those guys are playing well, and they're playing fast, and they're playing physical, and they're playing the right way. And you always want to cut down your yards. You always want to get more turnovers. You always want to do these things. But it's a process during the season of getting better and better. And I feel this defense getting better even since I've been here, even with the additions of Simmons, the additions of Judon. These guys have been ready to play. The rotation that we got a bunch of people rotating in there and playing and contributing. And I've been really proud of the effort and the consistency that they've been in to play with throughout the season.
You can talk about the defense, all the defensive stats you want, but to me, the one that I've always kind of looked at and said that's the one that matters the most is the one that really matters the most, and that's the scores. What's your score in defense? You can give up all the yards you want, but if you're holding teams out of the end zone, if you're forcing teams, if you're bending and not breaking, you're giving yourself a chance to win a game if you can score offensively. They're 10th in the league right now, allowing 19.5 points. But you even look at the passing defense, Mike. Their passing defense, they're giving up less yards through the air through two games than on the ground, which is kind of crazy to think.
Yeah, that goes to their red zone percentage, right? When you look at red zone percentage, 6th in the league right now, 28%. Because, listen, This is not a bulletproof defense right now, right? When you look at it, there are concerns about the way they, played against the run last week or the first couple of weeks. You do look at their third down percentage, which is not very good, 26th in the league right now, 46, almost 47%. But to me, it comes down to the red zone. We've talked about so many times what NFL defenses are nowadays. Between the 20s, you kind of have to play off and really get rid of the explosive plays. And then when things crunch down in the red zone, can you kind of lock down these other teams? We saw it numerous times, both against Pittsburgh and against Philadelphia, where you get into that red zone inside that 20 and you continue to make plays, Jesse Bates and all those other guys, and that's really where their bread is buttered.
So what do you do then when you're getting ready to face an opponent like the Kansas City Chiefs? How do you keep it up? Well, performance like the one they just had certainly helps you do that. Here's more from Coach Morris on Dukes and Bell.
You know, you don't try to beat them at their game, right? You got to beat them with getting the pad, making them uncomfortable. You got to beat them with doing something that's going to be able to frustrate them in a different way that they haven't seen. But at the same time, it really is about us, and it's about us executing at the highest level that we can go about our business. It's like Michael Jordan back in the day, right? He was going to get 30, right? How many did Paxton have, you know? How many did Pippen have? You know, you got to be able to limit those guys in different ways, and these two are no different, right? They're a lot of times going to go get theirs, and it's about stopping some of the other people and limiting the things that they really feel comfortable doing that day.
It's just so interesting, too, and I'm almost glad that this matchup with Patrick Mahomes, I'd probably feel differently if the Falcons had not won Monday, but I'm almost happy that this matchup with Patrick Mahomes comes on Sunday Night Football ahead of all these division games, right? Because it kind of forces you defensively to really kind of hit a next level when you're playing a guy like Patrick Mahomes, and you can kind of lock in on what he is. And then to the point where you hopefully go play some of these guys the weeks after that and say, well, he's not Patrick Mahomes. You know what I mean? And while these other offenses might be even better, especially when we talk about the Saints right now, from the quarterback position and the way you attack the field, you're just simply not going to see these guys in the division that you have seen the first 3 weeks of the season in terms of mobility and the things they can do outside of the pocket. And so I love the fact that Patrick Mahomes does everything so well. It kind of locks you in when you look at the next month plus of football that you're going to be playing.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things the defense to me needs to get better at is creating turnovers. We know that they sealed the game with the interception by Jesse Bates, which is his seventh. And oh, by the way, we talked about Mike Hughes. Jesse Bates is the NFC Defensive Player of the Week.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which is the third time he's won the award since coming to Atlanta. And this is, he's 19 games into his Atlanta career? So Mahomes has already got three picks this season. He's thrown in two games. Maybe you can create something there. They're missing guys like Pacheco. Travis Kelce has been kind of non-existent so far.
He's been absent, dude.
And Noah Gray, to that point, the other tight end, he's got three catches, but it's not been a lot. I think I've heard people say, well, maybe Kelce's been a decoy. Travis Kelce is never going to be a decoy in this offense. And the moment he becomes one, he's retiring because it means he's no longer that guy. It's just that there's some kind of mixture of teams have found a way to cover him along with maybe, not saying he has, but maybe he's not as locked in as he normally is. Maybe there's something going on.
Oh, don't come on.
I'm just
come
saying.
On. Come
you know,
on.
You know, you spend a lot of time at the U.S. Open, Tiff, in these goofy-looking outfits. You're not focusing on your out running.
Don't be that fan that tweets at people and says, you can't enjoy life. Get back on the practice
field. I'm just saying, so far, he's not been the Travis
Kelce.
You know
how many other guys have probably been at events? They just haven't been photographed.
Is it possible that in his 12th season, maybe he's slowing down? Maybe they're playing him a certain way. Hey, maybe right now they feel like they can focus more attention on him. So maybe he's – I don't know. But in your
– I think it's probably more that. I'm not out on the fact that he's probably might be slowing down in his 12th season. I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, he said before, you can't play forever. His brother's a prime example of just saying, hey, at some point you got to step away. But I do think there's a lot of lack of playmakers in the receiving game that allows you to kind of focus on what Travis Kelce is. And when you look at the fact that Xavier Worthy is all great, but we talked about it last week when the Browns came out and said he's just fast, right? The Bengals, when you come out and say he's just fast, there's just not a lot else to focus on. And so I think, as we kind of evolve and the way defenses play, offenses are just way, way down, right? And I think a lot of guys are kind of getting this treatment to where they're not getting the numbers they probably would have 5 or 6 years ago.
One thing's for sure, Patrick Mahomes is still Patrick Mahomes, and the threat of a mobile QB definitely presents its challenges. Here's more from Morris.
They present all the problems that you just talked about. For example, they ran the ball for 80 yards with their running back this week, or 90 yards with their running back. But the other running, the quarterback gets you another 70, gets you another 50, and gets you another 60, and that definitely increased their running stats. And then when a play breaks down on third down and you think you got them covered up in the back end, usually people throw those away or dirt them. These guys can move around and create problems, create first downs, and make people create bad angles for people to make tackles. And they present all kinds of challenges that way. And you got to prepare yourself to keep them in the pocket. You got to prepare yourself to keep from design runs. You got to prepare yourself when plays break down and not over to learn how to play the second play. There's a bunch of different things within the framework of having a quarterback that is mobile and be able to move around like that and to do the different things. You know, that doesn't limit the fact, that doesn't say that you can't just play with the pocket passer, but those guys present definitely that triple threat mentality that caused a lot of problems for us on defense.
It's like, you know how Jalen Hurts last week, when he gets out of the pocket, he's going downhill on you, right? He's going to get upfield and make moves.
Mahomes is going side to side.
Exactly.
Which, yeah.
Keeping plays
strain.
Open.
Yes, yes.
To me, Tiff, I think it's a really good point to build on it. That is where Xavier Worthy, as he goes on in his career, and you hope it's not this weekend, you hope it's not Sunday night, but he's going to, when he learns and gets that chemistry more, I think you could see a Tyreek Hill type relationship because of his speed and how fast he is, and he can keep, you know, it's hard to cover guys that are that fast for that long when the quarterback can create time. Mahomes is the ultimate X factor when he steps on a football field. The play that where Jalen Hurts maybe forces that last week and Jesse can run under it, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes makes that throw. Like
I completely agree.
He's so different, and it's not a knock on Jalen Hurts. It's just, it's really a testament to how good Patrick Mahomes is.
Up next, the Braves bounce back, but what does it mean for that final NL wildcard spot? Where do they stand in the race? Details ahead. Stay with us on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Michael Harris. Crushed. And Atlanta with a four-run cushion.
Money Mike is clutch. That call courtesy of Brandon Gotten in Bally Sports. As the Braves beat the Reds, they bounce back. They won 7-1. So now, when it comes to the NL wildcard spot, they stay within two games of the Mets and Diamondbacks.
Well, I want to throw this at you because this popped in my head a minute ago when we were talking about Schwellenbach. We're talking about Marcelo Ozuna getting off the schneid, hitting the home run, getting the RBI. Michael Harris is kind of up and down, and you talk about Albies trying to fight back to the big leagues to just see if he can put his imprint on the last, 10 games or whatever they have left. Is there anything that you would see in the next, I think it's 10 games, maybe it's less than that, that would make you feel better about the Braves making a playoff run? Because I've been searching for what I think it is over these final couple series that I want to see that would make me a believer in the playoffs and the postseason. I can't really put my finger on what actually that I believe the catalyst will be over the next few games.
Sleeping the Mets in a 3-game series would make me feel better. Ozzie Albies had
That would increase, obviously, their chances of getting in. I'm talking about making a run to the World Series.
Ozzie Albies had a big night last night for the Stripers. He'll be back Friday. If I'm not mistaken, he's only going to be hitting from the right side of the plate as he's still not healthy enough. He doesn't feel good swinging from the left side. So if Ozzie came back and you threw him in to the lineup, and let's just say he was able to hit second, and you have Harris, Ozzie, Soler, Olson, Ozuna, or Ozuna, Olson, and then whoever's playing catcher there, and when Ozzie comes back, you're going to move Whit Merrifield to third most likely because Whit said he doesn't really feel comfortable playing the outfield because of that broken foot that he's playing with. And kind of understand him.
Right, yeah.
But he's
suck it up. No, I'm just kidding.
But he – well, and you know what? I'm telling you something. This team was in the Mets position right now. If the Braves were doing what the Mets would, you would hear Whit Merrifield all across the country. Because it's funny because he kind of has sucked it up, and you're joking, and I love what you said because it's kind of a good point. But he gives you more offense than Gio Urshela, and then Gio is going to be a guy that comes in as a defensive replacement would be late in the game probably. But if Ozzie can come back and the lineup can start consistently scoring runs, 4 or 5 for the next week or so, I think this team could make a run because the starting pitching is as yeah. we have as good of a rotation, even without Strider and Ronaldo Lopez. Our top three are as good as anybody. I put them against anybody out there.
I'd love to know. I don't know who you'd even be able to talk to about this. I'd love to know what it must feel like for a switch hitter to get in the right-handed batter's box against a right-handed pitcher. Like, how, you know, like, when's the last time he did that? First of all, and I know that'll be part of his rehab and everything else, but that's got to be such an awkward feeling for those guys to actually step in against somebody throwing that's right-handed.
Well, we'll see if Grant McCauley can answer that at 8:20.
Yeah.
We are going in the huddle, and 167 modern era players have been nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2025. That includes 16 players in their first year of eligibility. So, among those guys, Adam Vinatieri, you know him as a longtime Colts kicker. Terrell Suggs, synonymous with the Ravens,
T-Sizzle,
of course.
From Balso Hard University. Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yes. Eli Woo! Manning from the Giants. And, of course, Luke Kuechly, linebacker extraordinaire for the Carolina Panthers.
Luke Kuechly is the first one I want to get to because I think all four of the guys you just mentioned to me
should get it.
Should get in. I think they're all Hall of Famers. But Luke Kuechly, I heard the question asked, did he play long enough or is this like one of those, well, yeah, he was good, but he was injured. Let's go ahead and put him in. I don't know if you've seen Luke Kuechly's resume. And first off, you know how I feel about the little loudmouth receiver that played there for so long, and I'm not a fan who is a Hall of Famer, I think.
He's not a fan of you. No, actually, yeah.
I think he could be. I think he could be mentioned because I like the way he played. Luke Kuechly's a guy I love on and off the field. And Luke Kuechly only played for 8 years. What if I told you that Luke Kuechly was a 7-time All-Pro in 8 seasons, 5 of those first team, a defensive player of the year, a rookie defensive player of the year award winner. The guy had 18 interceptions in 8 seasons at middle linebacker, and he only had 12 and a half sacks, but that wasn't his premier job. He was the catalyst for the one of the better defenses we've seen in the last 20 years, which is the 15 Panthers defense.
Took him to the Super Bowl.
I know Cam won the MVP that year.
Yeah.
You could have legitimately made an argument if you were an in-the-weeds football guy of Luke Kuechly being the MVP for that team.
No, and you would go around the league and talk to opposing teams that had to face him, and it was the same thing every time. That guy is so smart. That guy knows where the ball's going to be put before we even do sometimes. He's that far ahead. I know he was kind of just it sounds cliche, but the whole film room kind of junkie, but he knew the game just on a – entirely different level.
He definitely does, and I don't have any argument with that. And anybody who thinks that, and I'm not sure that many people disagree with him being a Hall of Famer, but I mean, it's I know Gale Sayers gets brought up a lot. Calvin Johnson's career was very similar. I mean, what did Calvin Johnson play? 9 years? Very, very similar. All pro, set all these receiving marks. And I think this will start becoming more of the norm at positions like that, to be honest with you. So
people are retiring earlier.
Right, at linebacker. And, you know, you're just going to start seeing this more and more, in my opinion. So I don't have any argument with anything you just said.
Yeah, I don't think it's about how long you played necessarily. I mean, once you get 7, 8, 9 years. But if you were the best at your position during that time frame, which to me, Luke Kuechly, in his prime, was the best middle linebacker in football. It's kind of a no-brainer.
Up in Carolina, we can stick with talking about them, I guess. Bryce Young, the number one overall pick. It was announced that he would be benched, and Andy Dalton will start for them against the Ravens on Sunday. This all occurred on Monday. And now in the days that followed, of course, the Panthers have been asked a lot of questions. They've all really been directed towards head coach Dave Canales, and he was asked if the Panthers are going to consider trading Bryce Young now.
Yeah, it's not something we're really considering. You know, we have a great situation with our quarterbacks right now with guys that have experience. So we love where we're at, and we're all hands on deck. We're focused on playing the Raiders this week.
Did you guys see LeBron James tweet out, "This ain't on you, King. Hey, you keep your head up." And I think that probably means a lot to Bryce Young because I think a lot of people feel that way. And it's such an unfortunate situation, and I think it only adds to it when – the way people perceive Bryce Young as this quiet, soft-spoken, undersized, like every kind of thing goes into that. And you just look at the situation. I mean, I was watching a video yesterday of him walking out to practice.
Somebody asked him for
an autograph, and it just seems sad. I don't even know what else to say about it. I'm glad that they're not looking to trade him, although I think that there would be a number of suitors, obviously. But when you look at the situation with him, I think this stinks in the moment. But I think a week or two from now, when he sees Andy Dalton out there dealing with a lot of the same struggles, I think he'll feel a lot better about it, that this pressure has kind of been lifted off his shoulders for just a little bit.
I'm just curious, and I'm not saying it's a Bryce Young issue, but you have Dave Canales, who was an offensive coordinator that kind of helped to bring back Baker Mayfield's career. And Baker would talk glowingly about him when we were down there and had their game. So I'm just, if you can't step in, and I know the head coach has other duties to worry about, I'm just wondering what is his role in also helping to develop a number one overall pick.
Well, and that's the problem, Tiff, is that when you look at Baker Mayfield, he's
different
seen
play styles.
Well, it's different play styles, but he's a veteran.
Yeah.
By the time Dave Canales got to him, he had been developed a little bit. He'd seen a lot of football. He'd been in numerous systems, right? Three other places by the time Dave Canales got to him.
That didn't work for him.
Right. It's funny because you see all that football and you put just a little bit in your back pocket, a little bit in your back pocket. And by the time you get to a Dave Canales, you can just use everything you've learned. Bryce Young has none of that, right?
That
he has a Frank Reich system that did not work at all. And it really, he hasn't seen the receiver position played at an elite pace yet in the NFL. So it's a lot of things going into it.
I also think Baker Mayfield was also a product of a similar bad environment. And even though he won a playoff game in Cleveland in his time, I think, for one, Bryce Young is the product of a bad environment in Carolina. He's got an owner that has no patience. He was his first coach wanted another player and then was never given the time to even coach him up before they were switching all that around. Now, once again, he's not getting time to coach up. He has had Adam Thielen, who I think is a good player. I think he's seeing ghosts. I could just see a guy like Kyle Shanahan saying, "Well, we don't have the money to play to pay Brock Purdy, so we'll trade you Purdy for Bryce Young straight up." And I could see Dave Tepper saying, "Yeah, we'll take that," and then ruining Purdy.
Stop. Quickly, predictions, since you guys like to give them and man up. Jets, Patriots, or Patriots, Jets, Thursday Night Football.
Give me the Jets and the points. I don't even know what the points are, but I'll take it.
Just because he said that, I'll take the Patriots. Who knows? But I the Patriots are a tough team. Ramondre Stevenson goes off tonight. How about that?
We'll make you man up tomorrow. Hey, this hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. We got some college football ahead and a mic'd up.
Yeah, mic'd up. Speaking of all the talk around Bryce Young, how about another couple of quarterbacks that know exactly what he might be feeling like right now? And C.J. Stroud, Caleb Williams, over the weekend, they made a lot of waves. We'll talk about their conversation on the field and what C.J. Stroud had to say about it afterwards. Let you be the judge. That's coming up next on Mic'd Up, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We have a Mic'd Up to get to, but first, some college football. And the Heisman odds appear to be heating up. College football season, as we know, always brings about some great performances. Arch Manning has actually jumped onto the Heisman odds list, and that's coming off that performance against UTSA.
Ridiculous.
So, Cam Ward, also a favorite. I know you have stuff to say about Quinn Ewers, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's ridiculous that Arch Manning has jumped up into this because when you look at Quinn Ewers' injury, I think it's an oblique. It's kind of a week-to-week thing going on. Arch Manning is obviously going to get a ton of this. It's funny because Arch Manning went off when he went in last weekend, and it opened a lot of eyes because the guy's been a superstar since he was like a sophomore in high school. It is funny, though, because you look at it, and Quinn Ewers' numbers were like 14 of 16 for like 185 yards before he left the game. And it's like, it's how quickly we forget what he did, and then Arch Manning comes in and lights it up, and you're like,
I'll
sprinkle $10 on that.
You know why Arch Manning's ready, according to the masses and the Heisman odds? Because he made a big run. And
the top end speed.
And if if you watch the game and you kind of look at everything, or if you listen to podcasts like I do, you know it takes in that game still. Thanks, Cole Kublik.
Well, these odds, they come from DraftKings. And so this is as of September 16th. So Cam Ward atop this list out of Miami, Jackson Dart, Ole Miss, Jalen Milroe, Alabama, You got Nico out of Tennessee, Dylan Gabriel, Oregon, Carson Beck at Georgia going down the list.
Can I touch on Jalen Milroe for a second?
Go ahead.
If they use him the way that they used him against Wisconsin.
Yeah, they've kind of bought into the run game, yeah.
And they use him that way against Georgia and some other teams, and they win some of these games. Jalen Milroe might be the guy we should be talking about.
I agree, but let me stop you there because I honestly am not so sure at this point. And then I say this as a Bama guy facing off with Georgia, and Carson Beck and Jalen Milroe are on this list. I'm not so sure that Tennessee is not the best team in the SEC. Like Nico Iamaliava, I hope I'm saying that right. He's unbelievable. I mean, the way that they go about things, they're playing with physicality. Ole Miss, too, but they're playing with physicality up front that we have not seen or we did not see from Tennessee last year.
I'm going to ask Rusty, and coming up in 15 minutes when we have him on, I think if Josh Heupel gets the chance, he'll drop 70 on Oklahoma if he can. Now, Oklahoma's defense is pretty good, but they've struggled offensively, and if they are as good as Mike is alluding to them being, which I'm not saying they're not, there's a little bit of hurt feeling still with Josh Heupel, the way it ended there for him as the OC at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Don't think he won't, because I know I sure as hell would, but yeah. I'm also DJ Petty with all capital letters.
Let me throw this at you before we get mic'd up. As of right now, who's the best quarterback in the SEC? Because I honestly, dude, and I still have a ton of respect for Carson Beck and everything that offense can be, but boy, a lot of questions after last weekend.
I think, based on the body of work, I'm not going to go against Carson Beck. I think a lot of people right now, the hot name is going to be either Quinn Ewers or, well, I would, I hold on, you know what, I forget that Quinn Ewers is in the SEC.
I was like, about to say, let's not gloss over that one.
I think Beck and Ewers are 1A and 1B, but I think right now the hot name is Nico Iamaliava.
Iamaliava is what I was talking about.
Pull it up for you.
Iamaliava.
Okay, well, I'll call him
Jackson
Nico.
Dart also pretty good.
Can I just call him Nico?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
Okay.
Just kind of like Tua, you know what I mean? A lot of that's how everybody just started calling him Tua.
Well, we know some people in the state of Georgia had problems saying his last name, too.
Well, look, you know, speaking of body's work, based on the body of work, I'd say that Mic'd Up's probably the best segment on this show.
Not
you
only
like
no,
that. You like
but
that.
Hell no.
You
no.
like that.
Don't you disrespect.
You look like, you, don't you like that.
Don't you disrespect the other segments on this show like
you
Man Up.
You just crowned yourself. Look,
yeah. Sometimes that's what you have to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
See, if this was Which One Wednesday,
won't speak up for you.
If this was Which One Wednesday, I would tell you how no other segment has crazy dating stories about going to Publix or about insight to games or about just talking.
No other segment has insight to games.
I'm saying all of it combined.
Well, speaking of insight to games, something crazy happened this past weekend after the Bears and the Texans face off. And it's crazy. The reaction's been crazy. All right. I want y'all to hear the interaction that has gone viral between C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams on the field at midfield after the game.
Good job out there,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah,
hey,
keep going.
Stop taking those hits.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
yeah.
Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
The reason this has gone viral.
No, come here. You come over here.
Yeah, the reason this has gone viral is because Caleb was not, like, I don't think he realized that C.J. was about to get in his ear, and he's kind of, like, looking off, you know, in another direction, and he never really looks at CJ, but it is like there are so many different opinions about the way he's acting. Should CJ Stroud be giving this kind of advice in year number two? I mean, all kinds of stuff.
I have a lot of thoughts because I saw a lot of those comments too and a lot of the hot takes on how Caleb Williams should have responded or maybe didn't have to respond at all. I listened to C.J. Stroud. I don't know if you're going to play that or not. Okay, so I'll save that. I'll save my response.
Yeah, let's go in here, and I got just a short snippet, but because he talked about it for about 2 minutes. But this is kind of how he reacted to the way that Caleb Williams looks on film.
And, you know, I don't think he was trying to, like, you know, be any towards me. He's just upset that they lost. I totally understand. So I have a ton of respect for that guy, man. I want him to do extremely well, just like any other guy until we play on that day. You know what I mean? And after the game, we can be cool. You know what I mean? But I'm definitely, you know, rooting for him and want to see him do extremely well.
Now, among other reactions, Tiff, a lot of people were saying, you know, C.J. Stroud's talking like he's Tom Brady. I'm going to tell you right now, Every time I hear C.J. Stroud open his mouth, I become a bigger fan of his. So,
he is one of the most sincere players, genuine players that I have dealt with. And I know he's only been in the league right for a hot second, right? So I do believe him in the sincerity of the interaction and what he was trying to do. Then also on the flip side of that, I can see, and I'm not speaking for Caleb, but like maybe in his mind he's thinking, all right, you're giving me this advice, but there's cameras around. Everybody knows in those interactions the cameras are picking up on absolutely everything. So maybe if you were going to do that, you probably could have met with him like so many guys do back in the locker room. You could have come back out and told him that. And maybe in that moment, a heated moment after a game where you're just lost and you want to get off the field, maybe that wasn't the right time to do it. But then again, CJ said he's had guys do it to him on the field and he appreciated it. And again, for Caleb's perspective, might be coming, being different, might be feeling different because it's from a guy that is just in his second year. But by the way, he's playing
Ding.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. So, yeah. He's playing like a 10-year veteran. I think that there's a friendship there too. I think they've been to camps together and stuff in their past. I don't have a problem with it. I think you should listen to all, you need all advice. CJ Stroud had phenomenal success in year one. Yeah, you have yet to throw a touchdown pass in the league. I also think people were maybe overreacting a little bit to Caleb Williams, because what do we always get upset with is that players don't take losses as hard as we think they should, or we, you know, why are they chumming it up and laughing after a game and swapping jerseys? And I always want to hear those complaints. I think there's a lot of respect. I just think sometimes timing is a big deal.
Well, and here was my biggest takeaway. I think Caleb Williams is still learning how to become a pro. Remember, this is his second NFL game. And I don't think he understands some of the structure and some of the emotions that will go around the fact this is a very long season. You are going to lose games. And I think when you have a guy like C.J. Stroud talking to you, then, yeah, I don't know if he thought this interaction was coming. So it kind of catches him off guard to where he's like, I'm just going to dap up like I would have done in college. And yet C.J. Stroud's like, hey, let me get in your ear for a second. And the fact that it's happened to C.J. Stroud a number of times last year, I think that C.J. understands that, and Caleb will grow to understand that. And I think it's something you probably won't see that reaction as he continues to have these midfield interactions after the game down the road.
I do still lean on the side of, it could have been a quick, hey, man, I'll find you after.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that. And I'm actually kind of surprised that you come from that angle, to be honest with you.
I think of it from those mics pick up. Everyone was going to see that.
But it wasn't anything negative.
And it wasn't negative. Yeah. But, like, imagine being the guy that just lost and then someone's trying to tell you, like, I don't know. I look at it from both sides. Again, having spent time with CJ from Ohio State to professional, that's who he is. He's a solid, solid dude.
Yeah.
On Caleb's side, I could see it being like, not right now, maybe.
I'm surprised because I honestly did not see anything negative about the way Caleb Williams reacted. I like it, not at all. So I think that he was just like, oh, we're doing this. Oh, okay. So I didn't have a problem with it.
Especially you already have the relationship with the guy. So it seemed like you could have texted him, you could have called him. I don't know. I'm not disagreeing with it, but I'm saying there could have been a different place to have done it on the field. We got Rusty Manziel coming up. Mm. He's joining us in studio. Our esteemed co-chairman of the Georgia High School.
I got to tell you, we're going to bring up a topic of conversation, Tiff, with Rusty.
Okay.
And something he just told me out there about the schedule this year in college football absolutely boggled my mind. It scrambled my brain.
All right. That's next. Stay with us on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.